Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to the Race IndyCar podcast. My name is Jack Bennion over at The Race, your regular podcast host. And coming up on this week's episode, we're heading into the final oval race of the IndyCar season at Gateway in St. Louis. So who better to have come on and speak to us than the person who finished second in the Gateway race last year, David Malukas. Obviously, Joseph Newgarden has won every oval race this season and also won that Gateway race last year, but we had him on the podcast recently. So we've gone for the driver who finished second in that Gateway race, David Malukas, who's had such an interesting season, a really up and down year that he's going to tell us all about in a very special interview, which is coming up. He'll talk to us about how he's used a mental coach for this year. He'll talk to us about some of the things that have gone right and wrong in this year at Dale Coyne. He'll also talk to us about his chances of a repeat of that strong result from Gateway last year in 2023, and also talk about the decision that he would announce, or that he did announce that he would leave Dale Coyne for the end of this year. So a little bit about the difficulty in making that decision, coming out in public and talking about leaving a team, and also what's next for him. He's obviously a big player in the silly season market, and although he didn't get into too much detail on the pod here, he obviously can't say too much. We're definitely expecting that he's going to be in contention for a seat at Andretti and might have even signed something there already. Obviously, David, not too keen to talk about anything before anything's announced, and there's still a possibility that he could end up somewhere else, but that's where we're kind of leaning towards with him. So yeah, without further ado, we'll head over to David Malukas. Just before we do that, make sure you stick around. We'll update you on the Alex Palou situation. We'll update you on what he needs to win the championship in Gateway. And we'll also talk a little bit about silly season and IndyCar's new hybrid test for the 2024 engine package. We'll come back and do that just after we've spoken to David Malukas. Here he is. David Malukas, welcome back to the Race IndyCar podcast. Nice to have you. How are you feeling today?
I'm feeling very good. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no problem. It's always a pleasure to have you on. I guess now is as good a time as any, given the fact that we're heading into Gateway, where you had such a great run last year. Tell us a little bit about how you're feeling about that, and just I guess it must just bring back some really cool memories, just thinking back to last year as well.
Yeah, it feels really good. I'm super excited to go back. You know, going from last year was a really good result for us. And even throughout the season, our short oval car has still been pretty strong. So things are looking up for us to get another good result at Gateway. Of course, I think there's also a bit of pressure going into it since it was, you know, an amazing race last year. I think people are expecting another masterclass show performance, and it's going to be tough to replicate what we did last year. But we'll see how things go, and hopefully it ends up being like that.
Give us a bit of a flavor of what Gateway is like to approach, just for the guys sitting at home who don't drive an IndyCar every week. Some of the things you're looking to gain from the car kind of heading into the race, and a little bit about the style of the place, because although it's a short oval and it's a similar kind of distance to Iowa, it's almost like chalk and cheese compared to Iowa, right? It's much easier with a tire deck, and it's a lot flatter, so I'm guessing you drive it a little bit more like a road course than you would like most other ovals.
Yeah, it's very special in its own way. It's kind of shaped very much of an egg. Turn one and two is much slower than three and four. And three and four, I mean, it's maybe not race, but at least for qualifying, that can stay flat. But one and two is definitely a pretty big lift, and that's where most of the time is found between the drivers. I love the track. I adore it. It wasn't just successful in IndyCar for me. It was always through the ladder series. I've always had success there, and just the facility and everything in general. And last year, going into a night race was the first time I experienced an IndyCar or any car really on an oval at night. And it's a different experience. I mean, that it just felt so much faster. I mean, I just felt like we were on rails. So, yeah, it was a special experience. And Gateway, I think, for the IndyCar season is one of my favorites.
I guess it's quite a hard place to know going in if you're going to be in the same position again, whether you're going to be able to be that competitive again. But what you're kind of
initial feelings just heading into that weekend? And like you said, there's maybe a tiny bit of pressure based on what happened last year, but just from a kind of performance perspective, what are you expecting?
You know, the main thing is I've just been going to the gym like crazy trying to prepare for Gateway, because it is it's the first time that they're bringing the alternate tires on an oval. And I don't really know how that's going to be. You know, alternate tires, it's a lot more grip. Steering wheel gets very heavy, and a heavy wheel during a mid stint in a race. I'm just trying to really prepare. I've been doing a lot of lat exercises, shoulders, just everything to make sure that I can hold on. But other than that perspective, yeah, we'll see how the car reacts with those tires and what strategy comes to play. It's going to be brand new for everybody. So I think there's going to be a few people that will make the right decision, and hopefully we're a part of that group.
Do you feel like you're in a better position this year because of the physical aspect of things? I mean, there's quite a few drivers maybe who come up from Indy Lights, and it's not that they're not prepared physically, but just the strain that an IndyCar season puts on your body and just the level of training that you have to do. Did you feel like, you know, coming into this year that you had to change your regime a little bit and do some things a bit differently? Or did you feel like you were okay with that kind of thing?
No, yeah, it was definitely a lot of things that needed to change. I mean, of course you could be prepared, but there's so many new things that happen in IndyCar that you wouldn't expect. And it's kind of like a culture shock. So going into it, I mean, from a working out standpoint, you know, I was working out all the wrong things. Then I realized that once after, you know, the first few races, I just realized it's more lats and my butt than anything. That was really sore after a race. So I was making sure I was in the gym and working out all the proper muscles, but also just from a eating perspective, you know, trying like the sets that I kind of do to try to get electrolytes and food before a race without, you know, leaving a gap. So it's like, I'm hydrated, but I don't have to like pee as soon as I get in the car. Like it's all like this own strategy that I don't have a personal trainer. So I just kind of figured it out all by myself and try to figure out what goes where. So going into this season, I have a much more of a better routine instead of last year where it's just like, I get in the car and I need to pee, you know, for the whole entire race. I'm just like, I'm like, please, no yellow flags. Just don't. Yeah.
Don't want to be doing like a gentle button in Monaco and like peeing in the cockpit or something. Like, it's not a good position to be in.
Yeah, because the team said that I'm going to have to clean it. So, you know, it's like, and I wouldn't even want them to do that. You know, it's just going to be an awful experience. Like they're just taking down the tent and I'm just cleaning my pee from the cars.
I guess it's been great to see that side of you come out a little bit more this year, your personality. And of course, some of that's comes along with being in the series longer and people just seeing more of you like week to week. But it also feels like your social game's kind of stepped up a bit this year as well. You're doing a lot more on the social side of things. We're seeing a lot more of you kind of off the track and that kind of thing. I guess, was that like a targeted thing that you wanted to do this year to try and get yourself out there a bit more and have people see a bit more of you kind of off the track and learn a bit more about you as a driver as well?
Yeah, it was going into it. It was more, you know, I didn't really understand, you know, what can be said and what cannot, you know, looking through the IndyCar field and just F1 in general or motorsports in general, everybody's very corporate and, you know, kind of, you know, and to a perspective, of course, you know, it's good to sponsors, you know, there's not going to be any conflict, but, you know, to myself, I never really enjoyed doing any of that stuff. And I never had an interest of it just because it wasn't, I myself, if I saw that as a fan, I would just be like, I don't know. That there's no interest in that. Yeah, and I continue. Yeah. So I myself didn't really want to post it. So my socials were, I just barely posted until I realized that, you know, I started posting a little bit more here and there and realized that people were really enjoying it. And, you know, I wasn't getting any like IndyCar, you know, no, don't do that. And Dale was all okay with it. So I was like, you know, I'm just going to be myself and I'm just going to post what I would post if I wasn't even racing. And everybody ended up loving it. And, you know, I think it's also a great thing that IndyCar has is a lot of drivers can kind of show their own personality and show themselves. So once I got comfortable with it, I knew it was okay. I kind of just started to really post heavily a lot more this season. Still lacking in a few perspectives. you know, now when I'm home, I just like fully switch off and I just turn everything off and then just, you know, just sit here. But yeah, no, from that perspective, I myself enjoy it. And I just find it funny anytime, you know, especially Twitter or X, whatever it may be called now. Yeah. Just a lot of memes through there. It's great. And the community is awesome. I just love communicating with all the fans and sharing memes.
You're already making some rivals with the bus pros, Joseph and Scott.
That was a bit of a targeted video. I don't know what beef they have with me, but I mean, no hard feelings. It was all good.
They're going to get you on the show, I'm sure.
I hope so. I mean, because the thing is that I've been wanting to get back on it and they weren't. And now all of a sudden they did this video and it's like what's going on? You know, you don't want me on the video, and then you're just like lashing out on me. But I had my Twitter army ready to support me. And I also said a little diss to him that he unfortunately didn't respond to. I had a lot of juicy stuff lined up. You know, if you, because I grew up with Reddit and Twitter. Yeah, yeah. Like if you want to throw beef, like I spent many years and I was researching that entire day. I mean, I probably a whole rollable document of like stuff that I worked with the team to like pull out from way back when he was racing. So I was ready to roast him pretty good.
It's cool. You're coming up at a time where there's maybe not as many people kind of like your age or your generation who put themselves out there like that in that way. And I know you're into your gaming and you've got a lot of cool stuff going on away from the track as well as on it as well. And I guess maybe you feel like you're kind of in a bit of a niche there where there's not that many people doing it. And that's maybe why it's even more fun for you, is because you can totally kind of express yourself in this way that not really anybody else is doing. And it's kind of like a bit of, it's maybe not unique, but it's like not as popular as like maybe some of the other IndyCar drivers you were talking about. It's like not what they would do.
Yeah. And I agree with that. You know, when I was, going into it, although I'm very much extroverted when it comes to the track and I love talking to people and socializing. When I'm at home, I'm actually quite introverted and I'm very much a gamer. I grew up in front of computers, Discord, YouTube, grew up watching all these streamers and these people. And, when I communicate with the fans online, all these people that grew up with me and they're the same age, they went through the exact same experience. So we can all just relate to each other and kind of get this own little community growing. And because of it, it also helped bring a lot of new people into IndyCar. You know, it's incredible for me when I would see somebody comment on a tweet of mine and saying, I've never watched IndyCar before, but this popped up on my timeline and now I'm going to start watching IndyCar. I didn't know there was like, these cool people. So to me, it felt really good. And I just love connecting with the community. And it's just like, although they're fans, but at the same time, to me, it just feels like friends and family. You know, it's all, I'm nonstop, always on Twitter and just hanging out with everybody.
For sure. Let's talk a bit about the season. I guess it's been kind of up and down in many ways. It'll be interesting to get your take on how you feel it's gone and where it's maybe gone well and where it's gone, not as well. I guess from the outside, it definitely looks like there's been quite a few years now of some of, Dale Coyne's this great team that brings these people through. And I guess you're the latest driver on that side, but also a lot of mechanics, engineers, people in the background. And obviously a lot of them get taken by bigger teams because that's just how IndyCar works, right? So just a fact of the kind of ecosystem. And it definitely feels like it's been quite a few years now where Dale's lost a lot of the key kind of personnel. So I don't know if maybe you feel like that's a big part of, maybe some of the struggles you've had this year, or if there are other kind of explanations for it. What do you kind of put things down to so far this year?
Yeah, from last year to this season, we lost a few key people that kind of really had the team churning around. And one of them being my main engineer. I mean, we lost him to the number 9 for Dixon. So, I mean, it's clearly, they were very good and Dale does a good job of finding good people. But yeah, it's just unfortunate they always get taken away by these bigger teams. So going into the season, we knew it was going to be some big changes going around from a structure standpoint. And, we were going to have to just work with each other, build up chemistry again, and try to figure out which way we want to go with the setup. And it started off pretty strong and then, kind of started to go back down. And it's kind of been like an up and down sort of hill throughout this season. But at least now towards the end, things have been a little bit more consistent. We're still struggling on a road course car, which we knew going into Indy, that track is going to be tough for us. And unfortunately, it was a lot worse than we were expecting. But at least from a street course standpoint and oval standpoint, I think we've actually gone a little bit forward with the car. So it's been a little, it's definitely been ups and downs. And we haven't really had a consistent team. People always switching in and out from the team. I think, now I finally have my original DAG that I had at the beginning of the season, just coming in for the last three races. So we haven't even had a consistent team, and it's just been kind of resource and structure issues that we've been trying to struggle with. And yeah, it's been tough, but I think with the equipment and the resources we've had, the team have done a really good job to kind of, still keep up with the top teams. And I mean, at Nashville, we ended up qualifying 5th. So We're still there and knocking out the door. It's unfortunate it took this long for a second year to start building up consistency again.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
We'll get back to the pod in a moment, but first, a word about our partner, Grammarly. No matter what kind of work you do, how you communicate is key. All those emails, reports, and presentations are equally important to the collaboration needed to get things done, and Grammarly can help. Grammarly is your AI writing partner to help you communicate more effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact at work. I know from experience that Grammarly can help you save time on any writing task and ensure you feel confident about what you've produced. In fact, 96% of Grammarly's users report that Grammarly helps them craft more impactful writing, and their tone suggestions can help you navigate even the most difficult work conversations. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Sign up and download for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
I was kind of interested in your decision to talk about leaving Delcoin, you know, relatively, I guess it was relatively early kind of in the off season, and though I don't want to ask you any awkward questions about how and why you kind of go about that kind of thing, but it was interesting to see a driver come out, you know, a little bit earlier in the off season, and I guess you have to do things like that to make sure that other teams know that you're available and stuff like that. But was that a difficult decision for you to kind of come out and say something like that? I mean, I know people maybe look at you saying that you're leaving the team and think, oh, you know, David's not happy there, he wants to leave, and I know that's not the case. Like, you've been so you've spoken so nicely about the team the whole time you've been there. And even now, even after you've said that you're leaving, you're still, you still take your crew donuts when things go wrong, and you're still like, really, you know, you love those guys. I know that. But it must've been a difficult decision to come out and say that you would leave like that. And what were the kind of reasons for that?
Yeah, it was very tough. From my standpoint, I just want to be as honest as I can be, you know, in front of everybody. And, it's from the team standpoint, I love them. And even after I say that, till now, I love everybody in there. I mean, those guys are all my brothers, and we've had an incredible time together. But just unfortunately, my views just didn't align with the team as a whole, you know, where the team's future plan was, you know, just talking with Dale and what the future looked like. It just wasn't what I, you know, had envisioned. And I wanted to try really hard with the team, but, you know, it's just, that was a big decision for me. And I knew at that point, I didn't want to go there. And I was just going to be honest, and I said it. And when I said it, I didn't, you know, there wasn't any sort of offers from any other team, and I wasn't. But I knew just to myself that no matter what, I wasn't going to be planning to come back. And even if that, you know, put me in a position where I don't get seeded for next year, you know, like maybe nobody else would put up an offer. But from my standpoint, I just knew that that's just how things were going to be from my side. So. But yeah, I told the team and everybody was good with it. And I mean, it didn't cause any drama. I mean, things just were how they were, and we put our heads down and look forward. And of course, announcing that as well showed, you know, other teams that, hey, you know, I'm definitely looking to go out.
For sure. I guess they might not listen to this podcast, but they'd like to hear something like that. At least it's, you know, you'd rather like a driver be honest about what's happening and what's going on so that you're able to kind of plan and move forward with that. And I guess for you, you at some point you have to put faith in your own ability that, you know, if you do put yourself out there, there's going to be other teams that are going to want to sign you, and that your performances have, you know, earned that, you've deserved that from what you've been able to do on the track.
Yeah, I you know, and that's another thing, is I believe in myself. I know that, you know, I have my talent, and I'm not gonna, you know, make decisions and we're like, ooh, I don't know about myself. Like, no, in a sport like this, especially at this top of the league, you have to make sure that you can believe in yourself and you know that you have the performance. But also, you know, felt bad for my side. I don't want to, you know, not say anything and then still have Dale question that, hey, something might happen for the next year, when I've already made my decision back in Mid-Ohio that I won't be returning. You know, I don't want to just keep it in quiet and don't say anything, and then you know, Dale's comes out to them at last moment. I'm like, yeah, so Dale, I'm not going to be coming back. And I was like, oh, well, now I need to start looking for another driver, right? So that was another thing, was just let him on his side know that I won't be returning and that you can already start looking for another driver this early in the season.
Yeah, for sure. I guess it was Mid-Ohio was your sixth place, wasn't it? So it was kind of like an up and down weekend, that one. I guess you probably,
yes,
it probably felt quite difficult to make that statement and kind of come out with all of that information, but then at the same time kind of deliver one of your best, well, at least your best road course of the season so far. It must have been a kind of emotional roller coaster that weekend.
Yes. Yeah. No. And I think that showed that, but it was good because it showed from the team standpoint that, you know, we announced it and it didn't affect us at all. You know, we still finished that weekend extremely strong. So, and I talked with all the guys and, you know, I told them, you know, this has nothing to do with you guys. You know, we love each other and we're going to finish this season strong.
I guess you probably got nothing to announce on the podcast, but let the listeners know kind of where you're at in terms of your status and where you're up to with things.
Oh yeah, it's chaos. Yeah, it's, and I don't even know what I can say about it or anything, but the future looks good for us. And yeah, I think that's all I can say right now. At the moment, I'm trying to think, you know, from everything, but I think, yeah, that's all I can say.
We definitely don't want to get you in any trouble. I guess the season's been long, and I know there's been lots of highlights for you, but also some difficult moments. Tell us a little bit about kind of what you've been working on, just from a personal aspect. We talked about the physical side a little bit. Is there anything in your second year as an IndyCar driver, either from like a driving style perspective, a technique aspect, or anything that you've been trying to improve kind of in that area that you feel like was maybe not a weakness last year, but something you felt like you needed to work on a little bit for this season?
I think it's more of trying to reevaluate myself. You know, I've been working very hard with Luke and kind of creating a whole structure about my performance. So we've been doing these, and I feel like this is something that isn't really kind of been, what's the word I'm looking for? I guess, introduced into racing, or at least IndyCar. I've never seen it, and Luke has done a great job from a mental side of things. You know, of course, physical, you have to be strong, but it's also very much the mental side of, you know, how do we perform? And he's been creating a list for me and kind of like almost like a wheel of my skills and how they've kind of adjusted race per race, how I've been feeling comparing to the variable that we've been having, and kind of creating my own little structure of where I'm at and what's the potential and how do I get there. And it's kind of just been creating more of a plan this year and just heavily examining all the performances that we've been doing and to make sure that we can go back out the next time and keep learning from every single race. Because at the end of the day, I'm still 21. And when you look from the rest of the field, and I'm still very young, you know, there's a lot to learn and to pick off of all these drivers. So we've been trying to just absorb as much as possible so I could get it inside my head and then use it for the future and just try to get better. So that's kind of the whole aspect that we've been doing, is just creating almost like a skill sheet of, for myself, my own little skill wheel, you know, like how the soccer players or football players, sorry, you know, you have their own little like, oh, their pace is 98 and their shooting is, so it's kind of like that, but in a racing aspect.
Awesome. Yeah, we had Marcus Ericsson on earlier in the season, and he started working with a mental coach for this season to help him out. And I guess we spoke about it with him that I think in motorsport there's like maybe a stigma attached to saying that you, because it's like deemed as a weakness, like you've got a mental weakness, so you need a coach to fix it kind of thing. Whereas Marcus was basically saying that you know you have like you train to make your body physically better so that you're better in the car. So why would you not do the same for your brain? And the stigma kind of angle just makes no sense to me, that people would be kind of worried about that thing really. And it's cool that you have gone with someone who can help you on that side and just go with it basically.
Yeah, I fully agree 100% on that statement. You know, it's very important. You got to make sure that you're in the right mindset going into the car. And I feel like it's stronger to admit that, you know, you're not perfect and there's still a lot to improve. Nobody is perfect at the end of the day. And if you give yourself the ability to improve, then you're going to be better at the end of the day. So 100% agree with Ericsson's connection there.
Awesome. David Maluko, thanks so much for joining us on the Race IndyCar podcast. We wish you all the best for Gateway. We hope you go, I guess, a little bit better even than last year, but I'm sure you'd be happy just to go as well as you did last year this time around.
Yes, that would be lovely. Thank you again for having me.
Hello and welcome back. That was David Maluko. Really nice to have him back on the podcast again and speaking about some
pretty difficult topics actually, about how his season's gone and where it might have gone wrong, some of the adversity facing him and some of the difficult decisions he's had to make in, you know, kind of aligning his future with his goals rather than those of Dale Coyne and going in a different direction. Must be a really difficult thing for a driver just 21 years old to make that decision to leave a comfortable team where he's obviously impressed and had a long-term future there if he wanted it, to move away and put his faith in himself to try and find a seat at a bigger team. So yeah, I hope you really enjoyed that interview. It was nice to get David on a good day there, talking about some of those difficult things, but also some of the good things that he's done this season and some of the things that have helped him, like using that mental coach and going against the stigma that we've sometimes seen attached to doing that in motorsport. You can go back and listen to our interview with Marcus Ericsson from earlier in the season, where he spoke about that in detail just after his St. Pete win. So I definitely recommend you head back and listen to that. So you won't be hearing the dulcet tones of J.R. Hildebrand on this week's episode. He's currently in Laguna Seca, driving some really cool historic machinery. He's having a great time up there. I know he is. I spoke to him a day or two ago, and there's some absolutely beautiful machinery out there. You can definitely follow J.R. Hildebrand on Twitter and Instagram, obviously, to get a bit more of a flavour of what's out there. Some fantastic machinery and some fantastic people. Everyone from McLaren's Zach Brown to Dario Franchitti driving there this weekend, and of course the most famous and important driver on that list, J.R. Hildebrand. So that's why he's not here with me. It's just me to break down the kind of goings on of the week that we've missed since our last episode. Obviously, Alex Palou is the big story of the moment. We had a whole thing break out at the Indy Road Course last week, where Zach Brown issued or the story of a letter that Zach Brown had sent to his team was broken by the Associated Press. In this letter, Zach Brown claims that Alex Palou will not join McLaren and is going back on a contract that he has signed. That's something that Zach Brown's claimed. And then in the aftermath of that, we had all sorts kicking off. We had a Chip Ganassi statement saying that he didn't have the same respect for the current McLaren management as he had for McLaren when he was a bit younger, accused them of interference. And that was quite a tasty back and forth there between Zach Brown and Ganassi. Then we had some more kind of things coming out, like Alex Palou's management, Monaco Increase Management, announcing that they weren't working with Alex anymore. And yeah, it's been a long week of trying to suss out what this means for Alex Palou's Formula One future, what it means for McLaren's IndyCar future, what it means for Alex Palou's IndyCar future. There's a lot of elements to this. And if you head over to the-race.com, you will find everything you need to know about the whole Alex Palou situation and some of the more in-depth and opinion-style pieces that we're perhaps better known for. You can find out a lot more about the whole Palou situation there. The only thing really significant to update you on is that we now know that McLaren have initiated legal proceedings against Alex Palou and his sort of racing business, his racing entity. And yeah, we had a statement issued to us by Zach Brown, which says, "We made a significant investment in Alex Palou, looking forward to racing with him in 2024. We're placing our trust in the legal system to resolve this matter, and we'll keep our comments at that." So that's the kind of very, very short update. But yeah, the second time in 2 years that Alex Palou has been sued by or legal proceedings have been initiated by a team that he drives for. So it's going to be very interesting to see how all that plays out. We've still got no confirmation yet on how this impacts Alex Palou's reserve driver status with McLaren, which he's due to take up after the Laguna Seca finale. So that story is moving very, very quickly, and there's a good chance by the time you've heard this pod, something else will have happened. So definitely head over to the-race.com to keep up to date with everything that's going on there. We know that if he extends his championship lead by 8 points in Gateway, that will be enough to seal the championship 2 races early, because we still have Portland and Laguna Seca to go after that as well. So definitely keep a close eye on his performance this weekend, as much as everything that's going on off the track, because there's a very, I guess it's not very, there's a chance that he could seal the championship this weekend. I think it's unlikely given how some of the short oval performers are expecting to do. I think it'll be difficult for Alex to extend his lead by 8 points there unless Scott Dixon has a very, very difficult race weekend. So we'll see how that all plays out. It's obviously very possible that he could take those 8 points from Dixon and seal the championship. So keep an eye on that. Also, our good friend over at racer.com, Marshall Pruitt, has reported that Linus Lundqvist is close to a deal with Ganassi, which is an incredible situation given that 3 weeks ago, Linus Lundqvist was, you know, not really being talked about as an IndyCar driver until he came in and replaced Simon Pagenaud and did an absolutely fantastic job at Nashville and again at the Indy Road Course for Meyer Shank Racing in place of Pagenaud. And yeah, it looks like he's talked himself into a seat. We know Marshall is very good at what he does, and if he's reporting with that amount of certainty that Linus is due to be announced soon, we'll have to go with that. It's a big story that someone like Linus, who has been sat on the sidelines this year, could be looking at driving the fastest car in the series next year. An absolutely phenomenal story. We'll keep a close eye on that one as it develops, and bring you some more of the details of that on our next pod, which will come after Gateway. One more thing to run you through: we had a 2-day hybrid test in the lead up to Gateway at the Indianapolis Road Course. This is in anticipation of introducing the hybrid system for 2024. You can go over to the-race.com again and read a longer piece about this that goes into much more detail about the hybrid, how it's different to some other series. They're using a supercapacitor instead of batteries. You can learn about why that might be in the piece online. And yeah, the 2-day test, they completed 1400 miles. Things seem to go well, and it looks like everything's on track to introduce that hybrid for 2024. Of course, they're not developing a new power unit for the hybrid now. That's been dropped, and they'll stick with the 2.2 liter unit that they're using this year and have used for 12 seasons now, and continue with that and attach the hybrid to it. So that's been one of the key kind of aspects of this story, is trying to package together a hybrid unit into an area of the car that isn't designed to have it there. And I guess the engine manufacturers have spent so many years kind of making the package as small and small and light as possible to go in the back of that car, and now they're being asked to shove a hybrid in there and find room for it. So that's one interesting aspect. And also how they're going to regen the power from the supercaster, and how they're going to use that is another interesting topic that hasn't quite been finalized by IndyCar yet. And some of the reasons for that and what they might be are also discussed in that piece I mentioned. So definitely head over to that and check it out. Obviously, Gateway's coming up this weekend, so keep an eye on that. Watch the race, watch all the practice and qualifying for all of the latest kind of developing storylines that we're seeing in IndyCar at the moment. And of course, after the weekend, you can come back and listen to JR and I break down the weekend and how it went. So that's all for this episode of the Race IndyCar podcast.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.